Welcome to Information Underground, the world's first speaks cast. Our website, www.info-underground.net. To contact us, send email to theusualsuspects@info-underground.net.
Your reputation precedes you, Captain Kirk.
Call me Jim. And just what exactly did he tell you about me?
How alone you were.
He told you I was lonely? Well, that is the price of command.
It was more than that. It was something you carried with you. A distance. Always a different girl in every world. None mattering beyond the moment. There was one who was different. Her name, Edith.
Some things are best forgotten.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Information Underground. I'm Klaatu, and I'm the host, I guess, today. With me, though, I've got, of course, Lost in Bronx.
Hello.
And Deep Geek.
Hey, Klaatu.
Thank you both for being here and going to sit through my Star Trek thoughts for a moment. So Star Trek is kind of a very big deal among, I think, a big part of the geek community. So it's kind of almost, I don't know, I felt it was almost an obvious choice to kind of discuss on a fringe geek podcast like this one. But I did want to talk a little bit about it for a couple of reasons. One being to break a couple of cliches. And one of those cliches, I feel, and you guys can tell me later how you feel about it, but I feel that the common notion of that Star Trek is good because it takes real-world situations and it kind of takes them into the future, flips them on their head, typically, and then presents us, therefore, with a world that doesn't have the problems that we're seeing in our present life. And while I see that there is a definite argument to that, I mean, the fact that back in the 60s there were, like, race issues and there was a Cold War and all this other stuff, and conveniently we had a lot of sort of racial, you know, race topics or ethnic group storylines, and we had a Russian on the bridge of the Enterprise. Those are kind of like, yes, I can see how they took those everyday real world situations, flipped them on their head, and said, here you go, here's the future, isn't it so much better? And a lot of people seem to think that was the appeal to Star Trek, and maybe that was a factor back in the day, but I feel like what it really boils down to are the characters and the stories. And in the case of I think any of the series, whether we're talking about the original series, The Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, whatever, fantastic characters that you grow to truly love and really get involved with the chemistry between those characters in ways that I don't feel like, at least in my experience, a lot of other shows tended to be able to quite wrap their head around. I mean, some shows had characters that you really like the chemistry of, but I think Star Trek, most of the series of Star Trek seemed to really excel at that. The other thing that Star Trek seems to really excel at was just really being really good science fiction. And by that I mean, if you sit down and watch them, and I did this for a while, I would sit down and kind of I would watch them very objectively, and I would view them as works of science fiction rather than as an episode of Star Trek. I would try to erase everything I knew before and after this episode. All preconceptions were gone, insofar as they can be, and just watch them for their story. And you'll find that overall, they just have really good science fiction stories that probably you would like to read in a dime novel that you pick up from a used bookstore if it was not even Star Trek. Remove the characters, or remove the names, remove the branding, and you'd still have a really good science fiction story. This holds true, I think, through really most of the series, and some of the major themes have changed. Time travel has gotten a lot more popular, and wars, you know, world wars, that destroy the whole planet, and kind of those kinds of morality tales have gotten a little bit less popular, I think. But the stories still remain really, really solid, and they just did that by, I guess, getting really good writers, and then, as I say, maintaining the good character development. So those are the reasons that I personally really, really admire Star Trek, and really think that of any science fiction, either series or movie, it really excels at what it does. And there have been some great science fiction movies and some great science fiction series, but I don't feel like any of them really kept up what they had for as consistently and as long now as the different incarnations of Star Trek has managed to do that. This, of course, brings me to a fairly new-ish incarnation of Star Trek that not everyone knows about, and I wanted to talk a little bit about with either you guys or just maybe tell you about it if you don't know about it, but it's called Star Trek The New Voyages, which essentially is fan fiction produced by fans with financial contributions from lots of different places, but generally, again, just people who really like Star Trek. And it's a completely independently produced, they got permission from Paramount to use the brand, to kind of use the storylines that we all know and love from the original series. And they've made new episodes, essentially. And in a way, it bridges the gap between the original series and that first motion picture from the original series called the Star Trek The Motion Picture. So it's essentially a fourth season to the TV series that we know as the original series. And in this way, they are able to not only develop where the original series left off, since the original series just basically got canceled. They didn't really ever get a chance to wrap it up in any way. It just got canceled. It was gone. It disappeared. And so they're able to kind of take that. But interestingly, because it's happening so much later in real time, they have a really interesting perspective on the original series that, of course, a real-life fourth season would have never been able to have. They can refer back to episodes that we know and love now. They can talk about things that happened in, you know, season one, and they can refer to it and kind of use it as to drive the story forward. They can refer even to things that happen later, like in the movies, like, you know, something that develops in Star Trek 1 or 2 or whatever. They can refer forward and backwards, and they can do really interesting things with time travel now, because we all know what happens in the future in this universe. So they can actually refer to those things, and we're like, ah, yeah, we know that this is happening in the future because we've seen it already in The Next Generation. So they've got a really neat amount of flexibility there. The stories are top-notch. In a lot of ways, they're almost better than some of the episodes, the original episodes. I mean, not all the time, but I mean, some of them are just really, really strong stories. And the acting is one of those things that you can tell it's independent. Feels a little bit like they might have gone with looks over skill in some cases. Overall, the series is just supremely satisfying and highly recommended, and just emotionally speaking, it's just so effective. They really know all the modern tricks of storytelling, and they're not encumbered by the fact that they're on 1960s television, where standards were obviously a little bit different in terms of tolerance of how much you can say or how much you can show or how far you can go with an idea. So it's a really, really great, it's a great series to check out. It's online, they're all free, you can download them, and I encourage everyone to check them out if you're interested in Star Trek. And that's really my thoughts on Star Trek. What do you guys think about Star Trek?
The new one. So you're talking about Paramount's actually allowing crowdsourcing for this now, right?
Yeah, I mean they are. They're saying that as long as they don't, I think they're bound to not make any money off of it, but they're free to use the characters and the storylines and everything, and the music and everything.
Yeah, Paramount has been good about this for actually quite a few years. I think they were quietly indulgent for many, many years. But I think, you know, Star Trek, among geek things, has a very, very long fan participation history. Fan fiction for Star Trek began while the show was still on the air, the original series. People were putting together fan fiction and, you know, printing it off on mimeograph and circulating it, you know, among their friends and things like that. And it's just naturally evolved. I mean, you can find what would qualify as fan fiction elements in pretty much every element of media today online. You can find marvelous audio fan fiction over at Darker Projects. I think it's darkerprojects.com or .org, something like that. They do you know, huge amount of Star Trek fan fiction in audio, like old-time radio type shows.
Cool, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. And, you know, a lot of it has marvelous marvelous production value. And you can tell in some ways that it was, you know, it was just, as Deep Geek said it, in a way it's crowdsourcing. You have fans all over the world putting in their little audio bits, and someone else somewhere else is putting it all together, including original music and, you know, writing and everything. And that, you know, that's audio. And then there's the video element. I mean, there have been Star Trek fan films for decades now.
Yeah.
You know, people started back in the, you know, the 70s, as soon as, you know, even with, like, Super 8 film and stuff people were doing. It mostly kids, you know, teenagers and whatever, but, you know, it got increasingly sophisticated as people grew up with this phenomenon in as an, you know, active part of their life. I grew up with Star Trek. It was, I lived and breathed it as a child, the original Trek. And, you know, it's been something I've loved all my life.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because, I mean, of course, the story goes that, I guess, after the second season, Star Trek was going to be canceled anyway, and it was the fans who literally got Paramount to even continue it, just with a basically a denial of service type of letter writing campaign, just saying, hey, you're not going to cancel our show. And it kept it alive for another season, from what that's what I've heard anyway.
Yeah, as the legend goes, that's how it is. It's considered to be the first time anything like that ever happened for television. But, you know, and it's happened since. The fact that it only got another season proved that the fans were the minority after all.
Right, yeah.
But it also proved that they were exceedingly loyal, far more so than other shows that were on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, but I also, if I may interject, I also heard that for some mysterious reasons, the fans for the original Star Trek were particularly sales resistant, and so their advertising on the original shows yielded no sales. Even today, if I see reruns on cable late at night of the original Star Trek, the only thing they ever advertise is accoutrements for Star Trek uniforms for fan conventions and stuff.
That's funny, and that sounds right for some reason. I'm not sure why, but yeah, that sounds about
well,
right.
You know, you could argue a lot of reasons why the show got canceled. I mean, they bounced around the schedule a lot, and they put it in the third season, they put it in this, like, dud time spot at, like, 10 o'clock at night on a, I don't even know what it was. It was, like, a Monday or something. Some god-awful, you know, Sargasso Sea of a time slot, guaranteeing it was going to fail.
Yeah, but to be fair, their writing in the third season went way down.
Yeah,
like if
I
you
mean,
look at if
I
you watch it as seasons, it
things,
got
but,
bad.
But what I remember of the original series that I love so much was the interplay between the characters, the three main characters of Shatner's character, of Spock, and of Bones.
Yeah, well,
and I'm wondering if this fan fiction is going to capture
it. Does it. Though? That's what I forgot to mention. Actually, it's amazing to me that you can even swap the actors out, and as long as if you can get past the fact that the physical bodies are different, the characters are still there. You get a real feel for the soul of the characters and their interaction and their interplay and the emotions between them. I'm telling you, they're right there. And that's what sold me on the new series. My resistance was, I can't watch fake versions of all these characters. It's just not going to happen. But I finally sat down and watched it, and I couldn't believe, like, after the first 10 minutes, I was over the fact that I wasn't seeing Leonard Nimoy as Spock. Or DeForest Kelly as McCoy. I could probably get over missing Shatner pretty much any day, but other, you know, the other characters.
How did I know we were about to have disparaging comments about
it,
Shatner?
It doesn't take long, right?
So,
it doesn't
how did
take
I know?
Long. You know, yeah, can I inject something right here, though? Honestly, Shatner, I mean, obviously he created the role, and our envisionment of what Kirk is really like is down to Shatner, you know? And we can't imagine this series without a Kirk, right? The original series, I mean. And if there's going to be a Kirk,
right.
It's got
no.
to, at the very least, it has to be acknowledging what Shatner brought to the role. And I, you know, I hate to be a Shatner apologist, especially how, you know, clownish
he's
become in his later years. But his early work on that show was pretty damn good, by and large. And much of what we laugh about are comic exaggerations that we have seen other people do over the course of time. But if you go back and watch him, you know, he's really pretty damn good. He really nailed that character very well, I thought.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
He had a way of overdoing things in general. I mean, I you know, you guys don't listen to Brian Ibbett's Coverville. But one of the beloved things is the William Shatner covers of 60s songs.
I mean, come on. It was the 70s that he did it in, I think, like in 71, 72. The guy, I mean, come on. You know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I mean,
but there was something for me lost where it was the overdone Shatner-esque acting
played into the space soap opera-ness of the first series. Did you guys get that?
Yeah.
No, not really. I would disagree.
I would agree.
I don't see it as any kind of... I don't really know
really
what you mean by space opera. I mean, I know what that means, but I don't really see it as that. I see it honestly more like dime novel, but maybe we're just using different terms for our different...
Oh, well, you have to remember the one where Kirk was escorting the female queen of some race, where if you touched her tear, you fell hopelessly in love with her, and... he did it, and it was a horrible thing, and it was a big scandal, and the diplomat was freaking out at the end. Spock had to lean over him, go, do the Vulcan mind meld thing, and go, Jim, forget. Remember? Who can forget that? That space soap opera.
Actually, yeah, that was, as I recall, that bit, that was from the episode where he fell in love with the robot girl.
Yeah. That was different, actually. And no, I still don't see any of that as melodrama, honestly. I don't remember there really being a whole lot of melodrama.
Yeah, the first lady of cyberpunk science fiction, who wrote the Pat Cadigan, who wrote the movies, wrote the novel Sinners, and later on went through to write the remake movie version of the screenplay for Lost in Space, always disparaged space opera. Always would joke about in interviews that, what do you want me to do, begin writing space opera and stuff?
Well, what would you call the remake of Lost in Space?
Yeah, really.
Well, I didn't see it, so I'm not qualified. But being a Cadigan fan, I'm familiar with her interviews.
Well, I wouldn't call it high science. You know, it wasn't hard science fiction. I'll tell you that much.
So, and what is hard science fiction? Because one thing I can't forget about Star Trek is that for some reason, if they have a list of four things, four technologies regarding something, that it's always the third one was the one. Was the one that was done by another culture that was made up.
Well, Star Trek is not, I don't know, we can have this debate about definition. Star Trek is certainly not hard science fiction because as I understand it anyway, hard science fiction is defined by extrapolation on currently known scientific principles without any deviation from that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the idea of the Star Trek dilithium crystals, or even for that matter, faster than light space travel, as depicted on the show, these things are the realm of fantasy because we really don't have any way of even theorizing how such a thing could work. So, hard science fiction would be something like 2001: A Space Odyssey, which includes fantastic elements like an advanced race. You could throw something like that in there simply because it is so far outside of our realm that, you know, you include it in, like, or I should say 2001 would be included except for the advanced alien race, because that part we have no way of really understanding. But by the same token, you know, the more realistic approach to an alien culture probably is one of complete mystery. But again, it's a matter of definition and you know, I mean, this is something that gets debated in SF circles for, you know, hours and hours. People just go on and on and on and really never agree on it. But Star Trek is not what is generally considered to be hard science fiction by any means. And in fact, it definitely dips over into the realms of fantasy, especially the later series.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I think that there's a certain disparaging thing about the term space opera. I mean, I'm fine with the term itself, but I think of it as meaning something really bad like Lost in Space, whereas Star Trek, I feel like since they did build up a certain consistency within their own universe, they're a little bit, I mean, they had like non-hard science fiction principles, you know, like the dilithium crystals, that's a great example, and the food processors, I think we mentioned that on an earlier episode, you know, those kinds of things are pretty far out,
yeah,
but they established them as reality in that universe, and it didn't change from episode to episode. Well, not that much. Whereas in something cheaper, like in Lost in Space or something, although honestly I've never seen Lost in Space, but I imagine they just come up with whatever they want to have happen.
That's a good point.
Just to advance the plot of that particular episode. So that's, to me, that's a difference.
Yeah, Lost in Space.
The show or the movie?
First off, it's good to, the original series I'm referring to. In fact, Gene Roddenberry got turned down at, I think it was CBS, for his proposal of Star Trek, because they'd already committed to Lost in Space. He had to scramble around to find, you know, support for his project quite a bit. But they were of the same era.
Huh.
And you couldn't find two really more different shows. Lost in Space had a really interesting premise and very quickly devolved into a childish program. Not just a children's show. It was quite childish. Even as a child, even as a 10, 12-year-old child, I felt insulted watching it. And yet the acting was pretty good. You know, the acting, there were some fine actors on that show, but the writing was abysmal. And it was obvious they weren't spending a lot of money on the sets and things like that. It was all done in, you know, almost all of it was done in studio, just like Star Trek. That was just how TV was done in those days. The show was badly written, but if you watch the first, I think it's like the first 5 or 6 episodes, they were intriguing. They weren't so bad, really. They had kind of an element to them that you could see this could be something really interesting, but it very quickly was dismissed, I think by the executives as, well, all, you know, the only ones watching this are going to be children, so let's appeal to the children. And, you know, so the plots are ridiculously simplistic. You have the Dr. Smith character very quickly became, you know, not just loathsome but painful to watch. There were a lot of elements about it. Star Trek, by contrast, could not be more different. It was never meant as a children's show. You go back and look at it today, even the old ones, and yes, a lot of it's dated. There's no argument there. It was, you know, filmed now, what is it, 40 years ago, more. It was, you know, so a lot of it is dated, but it is still not a children's show per se, even though it is appropriate for children. But there are themes involved that children, by and large, are just not faced with in children's programming.
Wow, I missed the boat and Lost in Space completely. I really did. I thought they were just being camp. I thought they were being bad on purpose. I'm wrong, huh?
No, they were not being bad on purpose. Or they were. Maybe they were, but they thought that's what kids wanted.
I don't think 60s camp was ever on purpose, by definition.
Well, Batman was camp on purpose, and I'm a big original Batman
fan. Batman.
Oh, were they really? I always thought that was, you know, I assumed that was accidental as well.
You go the other way than me, huh, Klaatu?
I think the camp element of a show like the original Batman series was intentional to try to get a laugh, but honestly, that being said, I think it was dismissed as camp by the executives and by the producers because they didn't think the material warranted serious approach, you know, a serious approach.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think that Lost in Space is intentionally camp, which makes it all the more difficult to watch because it's now it's like, you know, you could tell they didn't, or at least in my opinion, they didn't seem to have a great deal of respect for their audience. I mean, the writing is just dreadful. It's just, I mean, it's terrible, terrible writing. But that's not Star Trek. And I wanted to bring this idea up before we get into the fan stuff, which is arguably the most recent stuff that is of serious consideration. I see the different series of Star Trek that have come out very differently from each other. The original series, by far, in my opinion, is the best. I believe it in many ways it changed television itself. I think the writing quality, for certainly it changed televised science fiction forever after that. Every show that came after it was always compared to Star Trek. I remember when Battlestar Galactica came out. I remember when Buck Rogers came out and all those other shows from the 70s and early 80s. And they always in the media, always among fans, it was always compared to Star Trek. When Star Wars came out, and even to this day, it's always compared to Star Trek. Star Trek changed everything. And, you know, whether or not you like Star Wars better or Star Trek better, that's immaterial. Star Trek is the first one you think of to compare it to. So it's a standard of sorts.
Well, I think George Lucas has successfully put a nail in his coffin anyway, so I don't think there's any debate over it anymore. Star Trek is obviously...
Well, better. It is now. I think Star Wars and Star Trek are apples and oranges. I honestly do. Star Wars is classic, classic space opera.
Yeah.
It has swords, it has princesses, it has evil villains and knight, you know, in armor.
Yeah.
You know, and yet there's ray guns and there, you know, it's very, very classic space opera. George Lucas has never denied this.
Yeah.
And comparing it to Star Trek is unfair.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and that's not that's not to say that Star Wars has always been great or always been bad. It's just they're not the same thing, and you can't compare the two.
I'll go with that.
Well, I mean, it would be like saying that Gunsmoke, the TV show Gunsmoke, and the TV show Dallas are the same thing because they take place in the West. You know, I mean, it's stupid. They're not the same at all, and you can't compare the two. And, you know, just because they take place in space, they're not the same thing, and you shouldn't compare them. So I think that Star Trek, the original Star Trek, was at its very best when it was an allegory, which is, I think, contrary to what Klaatu was saying. I believe that it did its best work when it was being allegorical about either current events or basic human ones. However, they did some damn fine science fiction on the show as well, for the time, for television. You know, episodes like The Doomsday Machine, I mean, that was taken from the Berserker series by Fred Saberhagen, but they did it really well. They did, you know, other elements that of basic Star Trek, or basic science fiction, really, really well, I thought. But to me, their best work was allegorical work, which none of the other series did very well at all, with just some exceptions here and there.
Yeah, I would actually probably agree with the fact that I don't know that the other series did allegories very well, but see, that's what I like about the later series, I think. I don't necessarily love all the allegories that went on in the original series. I felt like they were very obvious and a little bit of a cheat, because the story was already there. You have to tell a story of how a Cold War can lead to nothing, or you know, nuclear arms races can lead to nothing but disaster. I mean, yes, I feel that that's obvious, and I feel that that's a story and a point that should be made, but maybe it shouldn't be so obvious that you're talking about the U.S. and Russia or Cuba or whoever they were up against. So, I mean, that doesn't work for me so much. Whereas, like, the really science fiction-y stuff, that I felt was their was really the strong points, and in the later episodes I felt kind of favored the more science fiction-y stuff and kind of like developing within their own universe and that kind of thing. I really did prefer that, and frankly I couldn't exactly tell you which one is my favorite series. Voyager is just unbelievably good, I think. Enterprise is great. Real nice departure from sort of like the established, you know, way of doing things. That was great. TNG, of course, is fantastic. That's kind of like the classic one. And then the real classic is just as good. So DS9, I haven't seen enough of it lately to weigh in on that. But I don't know. I was really impressed actually with all of the incarnations.
See, I'm of a different opinion. I truly believe that the best one was the original, and they've gotten progressively weaker as the years have gone by. I believe that TNG was...
I would agree with you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree with you if we were talking about the Star Trek movies. I feel like the movies have gotten, by and large, to be a joke. Actually, I feel that after the first one. So, but yeah, the series I like. But go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll treat the movies kind of separately, even though they kind of tie in, you know, they're supposed to tie in to the universe and to the mythology of the series,
right?
But you kind of have to treat them, you know, as their own animal, I think. But I think the original series was by far the greatest because it was the most groundbreaking. The thing you don't like about it being allegorical, I think. And the reason why I think it's so strong is it was absolutely groundbreaking at that time to treat science fiction in such a serious adult manner and to deal with issues that were contemporary, that were important at that time. You know, the whole Cold War concept with the Klingons was absolutely real in that time. And you know, there were, you know, there was an episode called A Private Little War.
The
name of the episode.
Yeah, the one.
And
yeah.
In that one, the Klingons and the Federation are on this one strategic planet, providing technology to a primitive race, giving them. You know, one side has got, you know, help from the Klingons. The other side's got help from the Federation, and they're battling their war by proxy, on this primitive planet. It was, of course, a direct comment on Vietnam, and. Mm. This, I think it's important to understand how groundbreaking this was at the time. Nobody was taking science fiction seriously in popular media at that time. And this show comes out talking about real issues that people could understand from daily life. I think that nothing like that had ever been done. And in many ways, it's never been done since to the same degree.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And I to me, that was important. Now you add icing to the cake and you get really good science fiction episodes on this show. I mean, not crap, not, you know, Dr. Smith acting, you know, all weird and flaky and annoying. I'm talking about real good science fiction elements that, you know, had never really been treated seriously on television before, and you have a show that was unlike anything that had ever been done before.
I
think that the original series was by far the strongest.
I don't mean to be ungrateful, but I that doesn't feel very close to me. I understand that it was groundbreaking. I just don't care. You know, I like the series because, and I'm not saying it's not significant, I'm just saying that doesn't hit home for me, I guess. I like the original series for the other stuff. I don't like the allegories, even though I feel like I sound like I'm not appreciating its history or whatever, but I'm just telling you,
well,
that's how I feel.
Acknowledge something intellectually and
stuff. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, but for me, Next Generation, their strength was definitely in the science fiction element of things. But if I'm going to be perfectly honest, Patrick Stewart carried that show on his back.
Yes, he did.
I
don't think anyone's
going to
argue with that.
That show, yeah, would have died after its first season.
You're absolutely correct.
That guy, I mean, he was easily the best actor that's ever been in any of the Star Trek series, easily. Far exceeding anyone from the original series, far exceeding anyone who's come since. But he's a Shakespearean actor of great renown. We would expect that, I hope, right?
Right, yeah.
That being said, he still knocked it out of the park. He didn't treat it like it was just some, you know, stupid paycheck, you know, because actors in England often don't get paid very well, even famous ones. And, you know, he could have just, he could have taken the check and just walked on stage. I saw, other actors do that, other Shakespearean trained actors. Lord knows Richard Burton did plenty of that.
Right.
And, I saw John Gielgud do shit like that. I mean, it happens, but he always took it seriously. And that made Picard an important character. That made a character that held everyone's attention. Other actors on the show, a lot of them, the casting on that series and the ones that followed have always been mysterious to me. I could go down the list, but there's no need because, I mean, it's just a matter of opinion anyway. But their allegorical elements were not so strong, obviously.
No.
Because that wasn't the focus of the show. The show was more science fiction oriented. Sometimes it worked really well. Some of the most popular characters I thought were their worst. You know, I absolutely cannot stand the Q character and the whole Q continuum concept. That whole thing brings in elements of magic, which cheapen the entire series as far as I'm concerned. I thought John Delancey is a one-note actor. You know, that guy can't do subtlety, and I think he was weak, and he was a poor choice for the role, even though people loved him. You know, later on. But as far as I'm concerned, on the original series, there were two actors. Patrick Stewart out in the lead by far, and Brent Spiner, who was actually quite good, I thought. And then there were quite a few really good...
Yeah, Spiner's work was amazing.
There were quite a few really good guest stars, too. But some of the writing was marvelous. Some of the writing was marvelous on that show. A lot of it was not. So that's my take on Next Generation. Voyage, or what came next? DS9. DS9, now I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan, so, you know, I'm prejudiced from the start because, you know, there's a strong legend that I thoroughly believe in that Paramount ripped off Straczynski, who created Babylon 5, and created their own Babylon 5 in the Star Trek universe. And so I walked into it hating it from the start.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
That being said, there were some very strong actors on the show, but only a couple. And some of it, the writing was really weak. Most of the writing was really weak, but some of the writing was good. I did not like their whole Dominion War concept, because that seemed like, you know, it was definitely something that was stolen from Babylon 5, the whole concept of it, stolen from the Shadow War concept. That bothered me quite a bit. I didn't like how some of the characters who had potential were kind of watered down or treated badly. By this time, the series had gotten locked into the concept of, well, it's just not Star Trek. So they didn't branch out and they didn't try to break new ground with the series, by and large. It started getting more stifled, in other words. It got much worse later on in Voyager. And by the time of Enterprise, which I only saw a few episodes of, so I take this definitely with a grain of salt. But I think by that time, the series was extremely stale. And Enterprise, in my opinion, should never have occurred. Voyager should never have occurred. Voyager was lost in space. Again, the irony is astonishing, considering that, you know, Roddenberry had gotten turned down because of Lost in Space already being there. So all that being said, there are gems in each of these series. There are some really good things in each series. And one of my very favorite Star Trek episodes happens to be a Voyager one. So, you know, there are exceptions everywhere. There are pearls to be found.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised to hear some of those opinions. Actually, I feel completely differently about all of them except DS9, which I was always really puzzled about. I need to revisit it. I did watch a lot of them, but I just remember them just kind of, I had to trudge through them at the time. But yeah, Voyager I just felt was like so strong. But then again, I watched Voyager. The best time I watched it was when I sat down and simply watched it, you know, the whole series back to, you know, just episode after episode, all in one, not one sitting, but you know what I mean, like a marathon over the course of maybe a few months. And I think to get a really good feel for any of these series, that's almost what you have to do, because you start kind of settling in with the characters, getting familiar with them, and getting some of the storylines and some of the themes a lot better than you might if you experienced them through commercials and had to wait every week for the new episode and stuff like that. I don't know. I really don't like the television format, I guess, is what the bottom line is. And I have a really hard time keeping up with series in real time. I prefer to wait till they're canceled and then watch them.
Deep Geek, what was your... I know that Original Trek is your favorite from what you've said. What is it about the original show that you like the most?
You know what I think it was for me? I think it was my first love deal, because it was my first exposure to science fiction. You know, and so for me, there's nothing like that ever. You know, it really, for me, it was the first science fiction I was ever involved in. And, you know, then I went to, like, the libraries, and I'm trying to, you know, find books and stuff about it, and trying to get more deeper, and there was nothing like it. And, you know, at least for me, there was nothing really that I found to be hot in science fiction until cyberpunk popped up. So it was the freshness of it for me.
Okay, well, here's a corollary. Here's a little bit of a similar question than Deep Geek, because I remember that you did I think it was an HPR, it might have been a Talk Geek to me, I'm not sure, but I think it was an HPR on the latest movie, the sort of the reboot movie by what's his name? I'm curious, and I guess maybe I just need to go back and listen to your episode. But did you feel like it was canonical Trek, or Is it, you know, one of the sort of alternate universes in possible Trek? If you know what I mean.
Oh, they make it. They're very explicit about making it into an alternate universe.
Okay.
What's interesting is how they do such how they went about that, how the time travel affected the situation permanently, so that it would all the future movies would not be in the same universe. They kind of burned bridges in certain ways to make that impossible. And on top of it, there was a big the different actors for me served to deepen my understanding of the characters as opposed to ripping them off. So those are the elements I really liked about the reboot movie.
Yeah, taking the movies as a separate thing, going back to the original, I saw the original in the movie theater when it first came out. And I gotta tell you, even then, I didn't care for it all that much. And as the years have gone by, I feel the same way, actually. It's not a particularly well-structured film. It was a special effects extravaganza, probably one of the very first science fiction spectacles that you would see, blockbuster spectacles, you know, special effects thing. And it was overlong and drawn out in that regard for that part of it. But most, you know, first off, it's obvious, you know, if you know the old series, it's a ripoff of one of their own episodes.
Right.
That is bothersome right from the start. You know, V'ger is Nomad, I believe the robot was in that episode. And that was disappointing. It really was, because it seemed to me like, you know, we've been waiting for new Trek, and now we got old Trek with a new, you know, some new wrapping paper on it. That was bothersome when that came out. Secondly, if you watch the show, or if you watch the movie, there really isn't a lot to it. You know, they're kind of just walking around. They don't actively do very much. They're just sort of watching everything kind of spin around them. So in other words, there isn't much action to it. It's just it's a passive episode by and large, in my opinion. So I actually was not a very big fan of the original, and the original did get very mixed reviews, even from fans. Now the next one, the second one, I believe was Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
And Wrath of Khan, I thought, was marvelous. It's a beautifully structured, very tight script, bringing back a very favorite villain from the series, and giving him a really, you know, great time to shine. He was as menacing as you always thought this guy could be, and as dangerous as you thought he could be. And Ricardo Montalban was a marvelous actor. He really was that guy, you know, could probably, you know, he could read the phone book and make you feel like it was important, you know. He was really very, very good in the role. And the next one, Search for Spock, was really weak, you know.
That was horrible.
You know, of course, you know, Nimoy wanted off the series, and they had replaced Kirstie Alley, you know, enormous Kirstie Alley as she is today. She was really slim and hot back in those days, and she was a half Vulcan, half Romulan character that they'd introduced in Wrath of Khan, who was slated to be a major character in the series after that. And they had to replace her because of, I don't know, contract issues or whatever. And, you know, they wrote the character down to almost nothing in the third movie. They introduced Kirk's son, I think primarily to give him some sort of background, because we don't really know anything about Kirk's background up to that point. You know, this is a character that has been out and about now. By the time that show came out, it's probably, we've had Kirk in our collective conscience for well over 10 years, maybe 12 or 15 by that point. And yet nobody knew anything about his background except a few quick things brought out during the series. So I think that was brought up. And then later they kill him primarily, I think, to give him a reason to hate the Klingons so much. I don't know. But it seemed pointless. It didn't seem to really bring much, to, you know, as far as I was concerned. But now, what was it? Star Trek 4. That's when they go back in time and get the whales.
Yeah.
That was a silly movie.
That's just embarrassingly
bad.
Yeah,
that was a silly movie, but it was a lot of fun, I thought. It wasn't one to be taken very seriously, you know, and it's definitely a one-off story because we have this whale probe thing that obviously is from a race that's so advanced that all technology is useless against it. And, you know, it didn't really matter where it came from or where it was going. It was just there. It was a MacGuffin. It was a plot device in order to get them back in time and to show them in modern time, because people love to see Star Trek people running around in contemporary settings. That, you know, even in the old series, that was true. And it's a silly movie. It's a very silly movie, but it's a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it because it was a lot of fun. And Star Trek V, that's that famous one Shatner directed, and had the budget of, I don't even know what it was, but it was a fraction of the others, and it was so bad. I've actually never seen the whole thing, you know, with Spock's brother who has emotions and all this other crap.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, that one is one of those that most people forget even was made, I think, or try to.
Conveniently, try to.
And then six, or was it six? Undiscovered Country, is that number six?
Yeah, that's where they brought Christopher Plummer
in. Undiscovered Country is probably my favorite of all the films. First off, it had a marvelous cast, Christopher Plummer and David Warner, and of course all the great guys from the original. And it was also a direct hearkening back to the old allegory element of the original that I love. You know, for this reason, it's probably one of Klaatu's least favorite episodes.
You are correct. Yep.
Yep. But I think it's because we have just different tastes in what makes for a good Trek episode.
I think it's more just because I'm right and you're wrong.
Oh well, yeah. Well, yeah. There's always that. Yeah. I'm now that you've said that, what a fool I was. How could I think otherwise? But
you should know by now, Lost. You should know by now, Lost, that Klaatu is always right.
Yes, even when he's wrong, he's right. He's right. Yeah, even when exactly. Klaatu is wrong, he's still righter than I am when I'm at my most right. And then, I don't know, after that it got into, I think we got into the Next Generation movies, which had already started, I think.
Yeah, and there was that crossover, Picard ends up in like the Nexus and visits Kirk or something weird like that. It was bizarre.
Yeah, was that an absolutely terrible film, or is it me?
Yeah, that was horrible. No, that was just as bad as Five. Maybe they were like sort of co-made or something. I don't know. It was a horrible.
I don't know. Well, they spent more money on it. They must have, because Shatner and Picard, you know, Shatner and
Stewart, Patrick Stewart.
What's his name? Yeah, and Malcolm McDowell. I'm sure he didn't come cheap. So, you know, he was the villain. And, you know, it was just a terrible film. And Kirk's death, which they made a big deal out of, was not a Star Trek death at all. Right. That was like, that. It seemed like, I don't know, like a Die Hard type, you know, thing where, you know, I don't know. It just was not Star Trek. And it was a bad film. But, all right, whatever. They finally kill Kirk and he's dead. All right, fine. And then they get into the Next Generation films, and honestly, I don't think there's been a good one.
No, Nemesis was really good.
One I caught accidentally with Next Generation films was First Contact.
No, and First Contact
I actually
was
thought
horrible.
I was watching an episode, but I really liked that one.
I didn't like that. Nemesis
when I figured
is the
out
only
it was
good
a movie was somewhat after I saw it, actually. I had to check with another Star Trek fan on that one.
I didn't like that one. Nemesis was the good TNG movie. In fact, Nemesis and Star Trek 1 were the only good movies of the whole lot. You're all mixed up. So Motion Picture was great, and then Nemesis was good. And
wow.
That's it.
Wow, because Nemesis is by and large considered the worst of the entire Next Generation series by most of the big fans, diehard fans. I have
First Contact was horrible.
I have not seen Nemesis. Horrible. I cannot comment on it one way or the other. So
you should see it, Lost in Bronx. You should see it. I would be interested in hearing your thoughts on it. Honestly, oh. I think it would be kind of interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I actually should. You know, I feel like I should see it.
Oh, I smell a future episode of Information Underground on that one.
Maybe, if we haven't driven them away with this, but
Yeah, really, exactly.
Yeah, I can just see him now. Oh boy, they did a Star Trek episode. Let's take them out of our RSS readers.
All right, let me put this out there. What is the best thing about Trek in general? Klaatu first.
The best thing, honestly, it's the characters. That's it. They have characters that are interesting and that interact really well and make you just want to go fly in space with them and be part of their gang. You know, that's the best thing about Trek.
Okay. Deep Geek.
Ditto.
Really?
Interesting. I would have thought...
If it wasn't for the interaction of the characters...
This isn't more of that Klaatu's always right thing, is it?
No, but no, I agree. It's if it wasn't the triad of Spock and Bones and Kirk, and in the Next Generation it's Picard and Spinner's character, and I can't remember the name of the first officer guy.
Riker.
Those three played together. And it was always Riker was, but you know, somehow there was this thing. It was kind of corny. They were trying to make Riker a sex symbol, which is, like, you know, so improbable from my perspective. But there was something about the way he was trying to bring along Spinner's character to be more human. That those scenes were unforgettable.
Yeah.
You know, I think I have some major criticisms of the characters in Next Generation. I like the ones in the original series better, by and large, with some exceptions. Some had to really grow on me. Chekhov annoyed me, you know, a lot in the early episodes that he was in. But he, you know, he got better. And by the time of the movies, I really, really liked the character of Chekhov. I thought he was a really strong character.
But
it took time to. They had to get out of that cutesy.
Yeah.
You know, he's a. You know, because he had that Davy Jones haircut, and you know, they made all those stupid Russian jokes and crap. It was just annoying.
Hey, Lost. Hey, Lost. Well, I gotta ask you. Yeah. What do you think of them, casting the guy from the Pot movie as Sulu in the Breakaway movie?
I thought he was marvelous. I thought he was a really good. Sulu, you know, by the same token, I kept expecting Kumar to come out and them lighting up.
Like, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I thought he did a really good job. And, you know, he was very good in the action parts of it. I mean, you know, the fighting with the swords and everything was really good. And he was able to take those comedic lines and make them work because he's done comedy. No, I had no problem with the casting in the new movie. Actually, I didn't get up to that one, but I really like the new movie, because it is not, they're not trying to do old Trek. They're not trying to create this, you know, incredible thing that, or I should say, they're not trying to perpetuate this thing that other people have done, and they're so locked in to this. You know, universe that they can't create new ground. Is it old Trek? Is it important stories? No, not at all. It's nothing but adventure. And there's no, you know, reason why Star Trek can't have that too. You know, Star Trek, the original Trek, had a lot of adventure to it. There were a lot of fist fights and there was, you know, derring do and, you know, close calls and all of that stuff. And that's what this one was, and I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought the casting was marvelous.
Yeah,
I'll have to see that one once and for all. After this episode, I'm kind of inspired to watch the new one. I've been resisting it for a while.
Yeah, I think
we're going to have such a follow-up episode over this one.
I know, really.
It's two movies we have to redo over follow-ups now. What are you guys trying to do? Throw down the gauntlet?
I guess so.
What I think we ought to do though is examine. Some other element, maybe not of Star Trek, but of, because we're all film buffs. We all really like movies, and you know, I've done one on Bollywood, and now Klaatu has brought up one on Star Trek. I think it's time for Deep Geek to step up to the plate and talk about something that is close to his heart.
All right, well, you know, I got news for you. I already have the film picked out that you guys are going to have to go procure from your library systems or rental arrangements or whatever.
All right.
It's called Grave of the Fireflies.
Nice.
What is it?
Have you... Grave of the Fireflies. And it's a deadly... Grave of the Fireflies.
Okay, all right.
And it's about... two war orphans in World War era Japan surviving the Kobe fire bombings. And since they couldn't rebuild Kobe, they did it in anime.
Wow.
And it's deadly serious. It's not for kids at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, is it in the same element as Barefoot Gen?
That one I'm not familiar with.
Barefoot Gen was, it started off as a manga that depicts, the characters are fictional, but their story is taken from real life, of two kids, Gen is primarily one, but they're survivors of the atomic bombing in, I think it's Hiroshima, and it's the aftermath on what these kids have to live with. And it was...
Oh, you have to send me an email with that title so I can make sure I get my hands on that.
Well, it's a classic. Oh, yeah. And it's been turned into... it was turned into an anime many years ago, but it's definitely not for children. And I couldn't finish reading the manga because it was so disturbing, I found. Primarily because it's, you know, it's... Have you... This is far afield from Star Trek, and we probably ought to wait for another... episode for it, but
yeah, I think it's a good time to wrap up the Star Trek episode, and if you want to begin discussing the future IUs,
we could. Do you want a tagline? Do you have a tagline, Kletu?
Yeah. Okay. Well, no. What's a tagline? What do you mean?
Something good to end the show on.
Like a catchy saying,
like in the middle of somebody's sentence.
Oh. I think that we've all learned something important today about Star Trek, and I thank you for talking.
He goes out of his way. He does. He goes out of his way to be an ass sometimes.
Well, I didn't have a tagline invented. That was off the top of my head.
Oh, God.
That kind of stuff you can't pre-write. Yeah, you know? That comes right off the moment.
I'm pulling the plug on my recording, okay, guys?
I'm stopping the recording.